and welcome to another Film Weekly. I'm Jason Solomons, and on this edition, I sort through the minefield of the best films to see at the moment. I've got interviews with two European women as well, both in very different sorts of chick flicks. Anna Maria Marinka from Romania's Cannes winner, 4 months, 3 weeks and 2 days, and Suzanne Beer, the Danish director, making her first Hollywood film, Things We Lost in the Fire, with Halle Berry. And I've also got the results of our competition for you. Who has won a DVD of The Ghosts of Cité Soleil? That's all to come on Film Weekly with me, Jason Solomons. Well, it's been an amazing January for film as the award season favourites arrive in a logjam of quality. If you notice the way the film year works, it's feast around this time and famine in the summer. You know, at the moment there are films you should be seeing, the ones getting rave reviews and awards nominations. For me, it's my job and my joy to see them all. But I understand, of course, you're a normal person, aren't you, with a job and kids and a family and a life even, and that one film a week is an admirable strike rate. So what should that one film be? That's what I'm going to do today. I'm going to have a quick look at judging by my own firm opinions, but also giving you a few punter pointers I've picked up from feedback. I think Sweeney Todd is wonderful. I'd have been quite happy if this film won Best Film everywhere, but that doesn't look like it's happening. Not quite sure why. I love Johnny Depp and Helena Bonham Carter in it. They're both funny and charming for a pair of serial killers, and the music is witty and often rather beautiful. But it is, I warn, a musical in the Kurt Weill tradition rather than the MGM jazz hands tap dance style, and Depp sings like David Bowie and Essex combined, not like Howard Keel or Gene Kelly. Thank God. It's also got an 18 certificate, which I don't really understand, because the throat slitting in it is comically grotesque, not really scary. So with all that in mind and not putting you off, I can't see how you couldn't find it a fascinating evening's viewing at the cinema. The Coen brothers are getting the best reviews and nominations of their long careers for No Country for Old Men. I love the film, but it's a hard, hard thriller, not a stoner satire. So if you like the same directors, Big Lebowski or Raising Arizona, then there's no betting that this is for you. Fargo's a bit closer, but not really. Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou's brilliant, of course, but nowhere near No Country for Old Men, nor is Barton Fink. But there are elements of all of those in this one, with much of their gory early work, Blood Simple and Miller's Crossing, thrown in. This is mournful, slightly weird cinema, but it's very slick in its storytelling. It's a page-turner of a film, high-class, exciting and violent one, with terrific dialogue.
How much?
69, see?
And the gas.
Y'all getting any rain up your way?
What way would that be?
I seen you was from Dallas.
What business is it of yours? Where I'm from? Friendo?
I didn't mean nothing by it.
Didn't mean nothing.
Just passing the time. If you don't want to accept that, I don't know what else I can do for you. Might be something else.
I don't know. Will there?
Is something wrong?
With what?
With anything.
Is that what you're asking me? Is there something wrong with anything?
My next choice would be the Cannes winner from Romania, 432, as they're calling it in trendy Bucharest. I've been recommending 4 months, 3 weeks, 2 days for ages now, and I know not everyone will like it. It's about abortion in Romania under the crumbling communist regime of Ceausescu. It's grimly realistic, but that, for me, is its joy, a gripping style of directing that is so new and brave and fascinating that it's almost the form and the art of the film that make it so interesting. The setting, the atmosphere, the performances are all captured brilliantly by director Cristi Mungiu, and that's what won him Cannes. Big audiences and mainstream awards are proving tougher to win, though. But I must say, I found the film's resolution and the very arc of its intensity, its tension and release, an emotional and intellectual journey of immense reward in the cinema. One of the film's assets is a marvellous breakthrough performance from Anna Maria Marinka, an actress who's now living in London, and I went to meet her. Anna Maria Marinka, congratulations on 4 months, 3 weeks, 2 days. I've loved it for months now myself, almost longer than 4 months. I saw it at Cannes, and of course I thought it was the best thing that I'd seen there, and then it won the Palme d'Or, and you've had this remarkable journey with this film. Did you have any idea that it would take you this far?
Well, it took me very far while I was doing it. It was a very, very challenging part and story. But we had no idea that actually in reality, you know, will put us through so many wonderful, wonderful journeys. And we've been with it actually from Mexico to Japan. And Christian, actually, as we speak, is in Japan presenting the movie.
This is the director, Christian Mungiu. What's the reception around the world? Because some people, you know, I always think it's fair to say that it is abortion is at the centre of it. There is an abortion. And a lot of communities have different reactions to that, I imagine.
Yeah, it will probably scare people, this word, you know, abortion. That's not the reason why I say it's not only about abortion, because it's not. It's about our humanity. It's about choosing. It's about what we need and about our acceptance and the price we pay for it.
Mm-hmm. It's also about friendship, it seems to me, about your character, Ottilia, and your friend Gabita's, the way you conduct yourself, female friendship as well.
Yeah, it's a film that women will relate to, I think, because it's this kind of complicity between women that only they can experience in a way, you know.
So did Christian Mungiu send you a script? Did you know what it would be like, or was it quite an improvised film?
It wasn't improvised at all. He's very strict, and I love to work with artists that know what they're doing. He sent me. I was already living in London by the time he had the idea of doing the movie, and he sent me a script, and I read it through the night, and then next morning I was on the phone with them, and they flew me over from London to Bucharest just to audition, because he didn't offer me a part. He asked me what would I be interested to play if, and I said Ottilia, and we were there in Bucharest for 3 days just going through the scenes, and I didn't know that I was going to get the part, really. I had no idea. But he said there that that's me. He sees me in it. And we started shooting in 10 days, maybe.
Oh, really? So you stayed there. How long was the shoot? Because it looks, as a film, it looks very fluid. It looks very, you know, things happen. And it was almost, the film, for me, happens in almost in real time. You know, you can feel the seconds ticking by.
Yeah, it's one of the... I love the fact that it's set in 24 hours, you know. It's one day of this girl's life, and that's, for me, it was one of the main reasons I chose the script, because the structure of it, I think it's fantastic. And that's what I was speaking about when I spoke about him being strict. Mm. He knows what he wants to do, and he wrote this piece about the stylistics of it before we start shooting.
That he told you, he explained to you?
Yeah. So I knew what it was all about.
And, what did he say? How did he describe it?
I can't quote him, actually. But he was very clear. That's all I remember, you know. And I remember that we felt the same things about this, the story. And he didn't have to explain many things to me, because it was all so clear to me from the script. And then it was very alive, the process of it. We didn't improvise while we were shooting, but we were talking constantly through it, and we would change scenes before, you know, in the morning even, but we would reach this form of everything. We'd know very well where we should be before starting shooting. So the mornings, that's when we rehearsed, because we didn't have any time before actually starting shooting.
Because it seems to me it's a film that the camera positioning, not just angles, but I'm talking about the camera is almost another person in the room. The audience, are seeing it through this camera, and I feel like I'm trapped in your world with you, like when you're at the birthday party, the dinner party. We're almost sitting at the table with you, having to watch you, and it's tremendously affecting for the heart and for the mind of the viewer.
Well, I have to say, this is Oleg Mutu, the one who signed the cinematography for Mr. Lazarescu's death as well, and he's amazing. And I have a very special relationship with the GOPs, I have to say that, because if I don't feel them, the camera becomes just an object, whereas if I can feel them, it's a partner. The camera becomes a partner. And I was so lucky to work with amazing people. And he's one of the most amazing... He's the one who holds the camera all the time, not just one...
And that was the same camera for all the shots?
Yeah, that was the steady camera. Otherwise, it was handheld. And he was running with me for so many shots.
Through those streets with the puddles and the potholes and the crumbles.
Yeah, and it was all... I mean, you know that already. It was all location. And imagine... him with that huge camera in the bathroom, in a real bathroom, in a real hotel, a small tiny bathroom, and creating space. How do you create space when all you have is 2 square meters, you know? Yeah. And running up the stairs in that horrific night, you know, when I threw away the bag with the fetus, he was there with me on the stairs in this block of flats somewhere in Romania, and with a camera, trying to keep the rhythm with me. I was a woman in distress running. I tried to slow down, but you have to play something, so you can't. So he's amazing.
And it works a magic because it gets darker and darker. And by the end, I mean, it's a film that the climax happens. You almost can't see it. It's almost in darkness, which is, I think, a very brave artistic decision on all of your behalf.
Yeah, well, what can I say? It's very personal, the whole journey we made. For me, it's not only 2 months of my life, but I grew up with this movie artistically so much. And I was a part of it. I was Christian, doesn't let anyone... not having an attitude. Mm-hmm.
This is your first film, isn't it?
This is my first film, feature film.
Yeah. Because then I saw you a couple of weeks ago in the Francis Ford Coppola movie, Youth Without Youth. Yeah, a receptionist you were playing.
Yes. As a blonde, curly hair, very, very different from this one.
You look very happy about it. Yeah. You live here in London now, but you were born in Romania. The film is set in 1987. Do you remember that era? Is it something that you carry with you, or have you completely forgotten it?
I will never forget it. It's part of my legacy. But it's part of my life, most of all. There are memories from my childhood, which I will never be able to forget, and I'm glad they're there, even if they're not the most... It wasn't the most happiest childhood in terms of growing up in a country hounded by communism. Mm-hmm. You know, but I did have a wonderful childhood because it was... Yes, it was protected. I come from a family where there was love, and there still is. And I was very fortunate. My father is an actor and my mother is a violinist, and I had access to everything I needed, both from, psychological, my needs of any nature you can think of,
What I mean is that if you're a child growing up in that circumstance, in that world, how do you know any different? I mean, to you it just must be normal. Or did you know that there was something oppressive about that time?
The tragedy about it is that you have to understand that from a very, very, very early age. You are taught to defend yourself and to lie, actually. And you're living in 2 parallel worlds. One is at home with your parents. And if they're honest enough to tell you what's going on for real. And the other one is the world when you left your home. Is school, is making contact with other people, how you defend your inner self, your right to think, because thinking was not illegal. You know, you can't possibly ban people to think. And we were told at home from a very, very early age that we're not allowed to repeat things on the street, that our parents could go to prison because us just saying jokes about Ceausescu. Life is funny sometimes. You have to be able to laugh about your distress, even that's how you survive.
So is it easy to recreate that time when you've done a period film 20 years ago? Are the buildings still there, those interiors, those cars, the kind of Kent cigarettes that are used, the kind of shop fronts? Is that still part of Romania, or have they swept that away and you have to seek for the period details?
It wasn't easy to find them, but they're still there. We didn't use sets. Christian is very reluctant on using sets in his movies. And we were still able to find those landscapes in Bucharest today.
In modern Bucharest?
Yeah.
So that hotel, which wonderful communist-era hotel, it does look rather wonderful now.
It was on the point of being demolished, I think. And the irony of it is that I shot scenes of sex traffic in the same hotel.
Really? With David Yates?
David Yates, 2 years ago. So it's this wonderful set. It became a set. You know, now it's not part of Bucharest anymore, I think, because they demolished it or they're refurbishing it entirely.
Well, I hope people go and see 4 months, 3 weeks, 2 days. I hope that we can encourage them to do so. I find it a cathartic experience, as I've told you, and I think it's a hopeful film and a film, but just an extraordinary cinematic experience. But I do know that it's not easy to sell it to people because it has got this kind of toughness to it. How do you persuade people? You do a better job than me. Go and persuade people to go and see it.
Well, it's there to be seen. It's art, and I think the meaning of it, and the emotion of it, it's the reason they should go and see it, because it speaks about such a ordinary life and day of a girl like any other girl in the world. It's not about a Romanian girl. It's about us all, and it's about our most profound feelings, and it's about the price of life, actually.
I can't think of any better recommendation than that from the mouth of Anna Maria Marinka. Thank you very much for coming on Film Weekly. Congratulations on 4 months, 3 weeks, 2 days. I think it is a masterpiece, and I think you're fantastic in it, so lovely to have you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for inviting me.
Anna Maria Marinka there, star of 4 months, 3 weeks, 2 days, the Romanian Cannes winner. People are asking me about In the Valley of Ella. If it's a choice between that and the Coen brothers, well, it's a tough one. Both of them star Tommy Lee Jones, here Oscar nominated, and he's just great to watch in everything, really. Both are shot by Roger Deakins, the British cinematographer, on amazing form amid the wide desertscapes of New Mexico and Arizona. I like the Coen brothers, as I said earlier, but I also like Paul Haggis's film very much. It's far subtler than his Oscar winner Crash, and is probably the best of all the Iraq-influenced films of late. It is, however, dark and troubled. And so are they all at the moment, it seems. There Will Be Blood is out next week, and you're certainly going to have to see that, but blimey, did it leave me depressed. Juno is the surprise package this year, a comedy about a pregnant teen, and it's just that, because it's funny and sharp and, well, quite a lot of fun, which seems rare during awards season. I wouldn't bother with Charlie Wilson's War if I were you, unless you're a Philip Seymour Hoffman completist. I'd go instead for The Savages, in which he's great, a film I reviewed on Film Weekly last year, and I thoroughly recommend it, although, again, it is rather sad. Hoffman is wonderful also in my favourite film of all at the moment, the immensely noir thriller Before the Devil Knows You're Dead. So, in trying to help, maybe I've merely confused you more. Where's the levity here? Often during award season, filmgoers want to see some quality, but after a hard day's work, they fancy something with a lightness of touch. Well, that's not so easy, I'm afraid. The Eva Longoria chick flick Over Her Dead Body is quite stunningly dreadful. Avoid at all costs. But there is a soapy chick flick feel to Things We Lost in the Fire, a real heart-tugger from Danish director Suzanne Beer. It stars Halle Berry and Benicio del Toro in a really lovely house and super knitwear, with cute kids and lots of ringlety curly hair. Halle's recovering from the sudden death of her husband, David Duchovny, while Benicio is his heroin-addicted best mate, trying to kick the habit and console his mate's wife. It's a bit of a weepy, really, and as such, I found it strangely enjoyable, like one of those classy American TV shows, like 30-something used to be. I spoke to Suzanne Beer, whose Danish family dramas, Brothers and After the Wedding, were given trendy edge by her dogma stylings, and I asked her how she attempted to match that European sensibility with Hollywood.
Asking a Danish director to do an American film also is kind of a statement in terms of, yeah, I should probably do the movie I really believe in and not aim at making something which a whole lot of people could have made. So I did that. I just basically decided that I'm going to have to do the movie that I truly believe is right.
I mean, you must have been thrilled to get stars like Halle Berry and Benicio del Toro on board, because they're both fantastic in the film. How did you persuade them to work with you, or was it very easy?
Halle had been sort of pursuing the part a bit because, you know, there aren't many great parts for women in Hollywood. So she, amongst a number of actors, had been pursuing the part. And immediately when I start talking with the casting director, they'd be saying about the script and about the parts, we kind of fell onto the cocktail of Benicio del Toro and Halle Berry. We kind of thought that that was really a very exciting and sexy and also in many ways antagonistic couple. And so, yeah, I was thrilled. And I was also very, you know, keen for the movie to have both of them.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because the part, obviously, that Halle plays, she's a black woman. But I it seems to me that in the script, there's nothing in there that says she has to be a black woman. Is that? I mean, I think it's a great kind of moment that you know, you've cast a black woman in such a strong part that isn't really dictated the fact that of her race.
It wasn't written for a black part. It was written for a Caucasian woman, but I didn't really care about it. I mean, I kind of, it was one of the first things that Halle asked me when we met first time, and she asked me, so what are you going to do about me being black? And I said, I don't really care. Let's talk about the part. And then if we then are going to work together, I'm not going to make it part of the story. I'm not going to, you know, this is not the theme of the movie. And I just thought it would be very fake and sort of artificial to push in an issue which is really not part there. And our culture is a multicultural, you know, we live in a multicultural society, and I think it would be ridiculous if the world of movies did not reflect that.
I think that's partly to do with your Europeanism, your Danishness is not to notice that. I think somewhere like Los Angeles or somewhere like New York, they're so much more conscious of race than us. I mean, Benicio himself, of course, is a Hispanic actor, and there's nothing in his part to suggest that he's Latino in any way either.
I know. I'm very conscious of this, but I just didn't think it was right to start doing anything out of it. And I mean, yeah, so it might be that I'm Danish, but then it's probably a good thing coming from a place where we don't put that much emphasis on racial issues, because I think maybe the way forward is to not at all times make them more problematic than they needn't be.
So let's talk about working with both of those actors as well, because, I mean, Halle, she obviously won the Oscar for Monsters Ball, but has been sort of struggling to find, as you say, roles that are just as good again. What was she? I mean, she seems to really take fire, if I can use the title of your film. She seems to take fire in your movie. She seems to be loving the chance to play this part, and she seems to be enjoying herself. It's nice to see her with a smile on her face. Was she enjoying the shoot?
Oh, I think she was loving it, because I think she was really loving playing a part. And she kept saying, you know, it's so great that nobody's telling me to get in the light so that your chin looks better. You know, she felt that it was very interesting for her. And also working with a woman director whom, for obvious reasons, were less interested in her looks than her psychological state of mind. And she was very daring and very sort of, you know, uncompromising.
She does look beautiful, however. I mean, she does.
I mean, but she looks beautiful. I mean, she would look beautiful if she was wearing a brown paperback. I mean, you can't do anything. She's just stunning.
What about Benicio? Because he's long been one of my favourite actors to watch. Just his face kind of tells a thousand stories.
One of my favourite actors as well.
where did you kind of get the idea of him? I know he's hot, but where did you fall in love with him?
Oh, everything I've seen him in. I thought he was magnificent. I mean, I thought he was amazing in Traffic. I haven't seen anything with him where I haven't been just stunned by his presence, by his... He's like always, at all time, totally steals the frame.
Now, did you improvise with the two of them? Because their scenes together feel very, very kind of off the cuff. I don't know if that's how you worked on films like Brothers and After the Wedding in Denmark. Is that very much the Suzanne Beer method?
I do improvise. I don't improvise completely openly, because I do also use a script. But I do improvise in terms of sort of using the script as a starting point and then working on top of that. So we'll have a line, we'll have a dialogue, and we'll start up in the morning rehearsing from that. And then we will change it so it's real, and it might, you know, it might change quite a lot in one day and less so on a different day. But I don't feel restricted by it. I feel that the script is a very useful tool in terms of telling the truth in each scene.
Now, I mean, were they, the US actors, were they happy with that? Because I know it's fine doing it with Mads Mikkelsen and actors that know you and trust you, but to get new actors on board to work in that method, how do you convince them to?
They were completely fine with it. They were completely open and were very inspired. And I mean, Benicio basically came to set every morning and had rewritten the script. And Halle had discuss your ideas. I mean, they were very dedicated and engaged and eager to dig out the truth of each moment.
You had some gorgeous kids in the movie, Suzanne. Was one of them Hallie's kid? It's got the same name.
No. It just happened to be the same name.
Really? There's lots of berries around.
No. And they have great hair, don't they?
Wow, I mean...
Like, you know, it was so funny because we decided that Hallie was going to have that hair, like sort of curly long hair. And then I saw like a whole lot of casting tapes for kids, and I was kind of going, oh, those kids need to have exactly that hair. And then we luckily found two kids which actually looked like David Duchovny and Hallie's kids and Hallie's great hair.
I mean, Benicio's got a fine head of hair on him as well. I mean, your movie's a good hair movie, Suzanne. Suzanne, I've just come back from Los Angeles, where I know that the Irish director Jim Sheridan is remaking Brothers in Los Angeles.
That's right.
And is After the Wedding going to be remade as well? I hear that.
Yes. Actually, all three of them are, like all the three that I developed with Anders Thomas Jensen, they're all being Open Hearts and After the Wedding and Brothers is Not Shooting are all being remade, which I consider a great compliment because apparently those stories have some sort of universal truth and very, very odd.
But they never asked you to remake them.
I couldn't do that. You know, for me, movie making is very much about momentum, and I had my momentum with those movies when I shot them, when I shot the originals, and I couldn't do it again.
Well, Suzanne, I think that I fell in love with your work with Open Hearts, which has got this kind of very much your films work on the heart, I think, and they make you cry as well, unashamedly, which is amazing because you're a very sort of strong woman, but your films I think are very, very emotional, and I think that's a great combination.
Well, thank you. Very kind of you.
Well, I hope it works. And The Things We Lost in the Fire, I think, definitely has that toughness and then a kind of great big beating heart. So congratulations on that. And I wish you the best of luck with it and its release. And thank you very much for talking to us here on Film Weekly.
Thank you very much.
Suzanne Beer and her film Things We Lost in the Fire opens this week. So, to sum up, Sweeney Todd for gruesome, witty fun. No Country for Old Men for cold, hard storytelling. Before the Devil Knows You're Dead for cool, noir, New York brilliance from Sidney Lumet. The Savages for ironic miserabilists everywhere and wannabe novelists. In the Valley of Ella for anti-Americans and Tommy Lee Jones fans. And two very different chick flicks, both of which men can attend without wanting to scream, P.S. I hate you, Hilary Swank. They are, of course, 4 months, 3 weeks, 2 days for rigorous Euro arthouse direction and blistering acting, and Things We Lost in the Fire for mushy sentiment, beautifully acted by Benicio and the lovely, lovely Halle Berry. Well, I hope that's helped. It really is necessary to keep up with award season these days to know what's going on in cinema. The nominees are, generally these days, very high standards. Catch This Is England and Control on DVD if you haven't yet seen them. And, of course, Atonement out on DVD on Monday, which I think is an extremely bright, big screen adaptation of a very difficult text. As they say on emotional counselling shows, do let us know how you get on. If the hype has disappointed you or if the posters and reviews have misled you. I met a bloke the other day who hated Sweeney Todd because of the singing. So now you see why we at Film Weekly are here. And before you all go off to the cinema, there's our competition from last week to be dealing with. We offered you the chance to win on DVD the documentary about Haitian gang warfare, The Ghosts of Cité Soleil. Thanks to the woman who posted her own lengthy review on our blog page last week. It certainly gave another side of the story and very persuasively, but I have to disagree with you, madam, because this film is, I feel, a dispassionate study of chaos, greed, guns and sex. An example of how all government, be it left or right wing or do-good pious NGOs, is corruptible and fatally removed from the real needs of its poverty-stricken people. And how, on a wider context, it takes us into slums everywhere, shanty towns the world over, from Brazil to Kenya to China. Anyway, rant over. All I wanted to know to win the film on DVD was how its director, Azgaleth, was connected to Dogma director Lars von Trier. Thanks for all your answers, all of them pretty spot on, all of them from around the world, from Holland, Belfast, London, Hong Kong. We couldn't pick you all. The random computer alighted on two winners, one from David Balfour, who says, the director Leff's dad was the subject of Trier's The Five Obstructions. Leff's dad is also a filmmaker called Jorgen, and he lives in Haiti. Thank you, David. You're absolutely right. He does add that, Jason, your interview with the director was so good, I actually got off my arse and went to see the film in the cinema. Well done to you. Who said journalists can't change the world? Well done to you, David, and well done for winning this week. My final winner is from Gainesville, Florida. Hello, Samir Mathur. Thank you for your answer. He says, Jason, Asgaleth's dad, Jorgen Leth, is the subject of The Five Obstructions, in which Lars von Trier forces him to remake his old film, The Perfect Human, in increasingly wacky ways. Indeed, you're correct, Samir, and a copy of Cité Soleil wings its way to, I suppose, our nearest answer to Haiti, isn't it? Florida. Well done to you all. Film Weekly was produced by Paul Noble. I'm Jason Solomons, and with all that to be getting on with, we wish you the very best of luck and very, very happy viewing.